Welcome back to What's the Point? And our addition this series is a very Bonhoeffer Christmas.
Woo.
Joining me, Pastor Tom, or just Tom right now on the pod, is
Katie
and Heather.
Whoop whoop. We are talking about all things Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Sorry, this is going to make a crunch noise as I adjust my microphone. Oh, there we are.
Oh, that's good.
Better. Sorry, I got a little excited earlier and moved my mic. Welcome back. We are on episode 2 of A Very Bonhoeffer Christmas. I have a stack of books next to me. Heather has some authors that she's pulled up as far as who are great Bonhoeffer resources. So we'll give you a little, a few nuggets here if you want to dive deeper into Bonhoeffer this Advent season with us. I will note it is preschool pickup, and so there might be a little extra noise in the background as we continue with our pod here. But I am so excited to offer up some resources because Heather wrote a thesis on Bonhoeffer.
I did.
And I wrote a thesis on Bonhoeffer. So.
And I did not.
Okay, but before we dig into Bonhoeffer, you're so excited about Bonhoeffer that you're missing. Look at the outline that you constructed here.
I'm so sorry, but who wouldn't? It's Dietrich. Come on.
Okay. Well, calm down. Before we hop in, we gotta set the scene. We're talking about A Very Bonhoeffer Christmas, okay. So let's focus on Christmas here for a minute. Okay. Get yourself in the mindset. Christmas ornaments are a passion of mine. My family tolerates this about me. It started when I was a kid. We have got an ornament every year. For my kids, we have taken them out and let them pick out an ornament every year. And we still haven't done it this year. And it's gnawing at me that we haven't gotten out for them to get their ornaments. But I love Christmas ornaments because they carry so many memories. For me, at least. I don't understand people who just put colored balls on their trees. I just don't understand it. So sorry, you might be one of those people. But
do you have the colored balls on your
not room.
Okay. I mean, we're there at one point. I'm asking because we're moving in that direction.
Okay.
We do have the colored balls, but we
our Christmas tree started out before we had kids. It was mostly my Christmas ornaments that, my mom had gifted me when I moved out and said, Here you go. This is your collection. Mm-hmm. Take this. And so that's what we had. And she felt sorry for Herschel the first few years that he didn't have those. So now he has his own little collection. You have on our outline here is favorite Christmas ornament, and I don't even know if I could pick one.
Oh boy.
But the one I was talking about most recently was one that my daughter Lucy, who was 15, made when she was in Noah's Ark preschool, and they're making them again this year, where the kids dress up in a costume from their nativity dress-up clothes. Uh-huh. So this is a picture of Lucy wearing a white angel outfit with a halo and everything, and then standing at the stable that we have set up in the Trinity room with a baby Jesus in the manger and her arms extended out, and has this beautiful little serene 4-year-old face.
Oh my gosh.
And so it's this picture with popsicle stick little house around it, and
that's adorable.
It's just my favorite. I love it so much. So I'm wondering, do you have Christmas ornaments that are favorites, meaningful? What do you got?
Okay. So I also have a box of ornaments. However, it's still currently at my parents' house. So it's not on our tree. But I think I had mentioned in a previous episode of one of our podcasts that Jake and I already set up our tree. I set up our tree before Thanksgiving. And Jake and I are stupid and love stupid ornaments.
Hold on a second. I think people are going to splice that and just put that on repeat. Jake and I are stupid.
Well, that's fine because it's true. No, but we love stupid ornaments. And I think currently on our tree, so this is the first tree we've had together. This is our third Christmas, mm-hmm. first tree we've had together, whatever. Currently, of the ornaments that are on our tree, I have two favorites. So the first one I also had mentioned in a previous podcast before Thanksgiving is a can of cranberries.
Oh, like, that's right.
Yep.
Because you love canned cranberries.
I love canned cranberries.
A can, a literal can.
Oh, yeah.
It has to hold the shape.
And this one is, it's the can of cranberries and then like a little bit of the cranberries sticking out. And on those cranberries, yeah, you can see the ridges.
Love it.
But then I also have one. So there are two things in this world that I love, 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 possibly more than anything else. First one, hippos. I love hippos.
Okay.
So much. Number two, fancy bath. We found an ornament of a hippo in a bathtub, like bubbles all over it. You know, you got your rubber ducky. Uh-huh. It's amazing. I am obsessed.
Okay. So it's a hippo in a fancy bath.
Yeah. It's amazing.
I love it.
So those are my two favorites currently.
Mm-hmm. Top that, Tom.
How do you feel about a hippopotamus for Christmas song?
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Here's the thing. I loved it for a while, like in middle school. I was like, heck yeah, this is my jam. Now I'm kind of like, maybe once a year. Like once a season is plenty for me.
I think once is too much.
That's fair. That's your opinion. You're entitled to that.
I'd rather listen to a Cactus Christmas.
No. If you guys have not heard Cactus Christmas by Brian Setzer Orchestra, on one hand, you need to. On the other hand, I hate it. It's stupid. It's a stupid Christmas song. So I should like it because, you know, I'm stupid. But
no, we should do stupid Christmas songs.
Oh, we should.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I worked at Eddie Bauer seasonally before God. I started working here. So I was in that store through the whole Christmas season. Yeah. And they just have a playlist that's looped.
Sure.
And it's just like a CD on loop. And when you're working like an 8-hour shift, you hear the same songs. Uh-huh. And like a coworker of mine, we really bonded over at California Christmas.
Oh,
like these are not songs that you would hear otherwise.
No, and, this is one of those songs. Mm. Everyone go listen to Cactus Christmas and tell me what you think about it. Cindy hates it already.
Oh my gosh. Okay, Tom, go. Christmas ornament.
You know, we have some globes, balls, whatever mm-hmm. on our tree, but we bought those when we first had a tree when I was in seminary. Like we went to Target and bought the big
too.
Thing.
Yep.
And then we've been intentional about adding the fun ones mm-hmm. every year. Mm-hmm. And it started out when we were young and in seminary. We just went to Goodwill and we were like, let's buy these weird ornaments.
Oh, that's so smart.
And so like we've got a firefighter Santa and like all these like weird things. Just like, and so I know what those are, but the kids, they don't care.
Oh, yeah.
So we, everyone gets an ornament every year. Well, adults sometimes. Kids, yes. Mm-hmm. Saint Nick will be bringing the children an ornament.
Oh.
Yes.
So you think.
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful.
Okay.
He has done that in the past. But my favorite one I bought for myself a couple of years ago. It is a piece of wood, like a branch, and someone clearly just like put like a Mod Podge sticker or something mm-hmm. on it, and it's a bomber hat, and then just some words. It says, "Are you serious, Clark?"
Ah,
so
nice
movie reference to my favorite Christmas
movie.
I feel like people love it or hate it.
Yeah,
there's not a whole lot of in between.
Yeah,
and I like it because every year I just relate more and more with Clark, and. Mm. And I find something new to laugh at by myself in my basement as I watch it because no one else will watch it.
So you have not introduced the children to Christmas Vacation?
No, I have not and will not for some time.
Uh-huh. Yep, understandable.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, that's my favorite ornament.
Hmm.
Not cute, kid-related.
No, I like it.
Not a hippo in a bathtub. Just a movie reference.
Not all of them can be that good.
All good.
Okay, enough of this riffraff.
All
right, right. We need
dive
to.
In. We dive need in. To.
But let's just debrief for a second.
Yeah.
Not debrief. Let's just talk about some resources here. One of my favorite Bonhoeffer in a Nutshell books is Bonhoeffer, in the Armchair Theologian series. So this series just takes big theological thinkers and writes like a 200-page or so book on their life. And there's like cartoony pictures and everything. It's made to digest by, I'd say, high school and above for readers. So Bonhoeffer for Armchair Theologians, 100% recommend. Heather, who was the author that you had read that you really felt like was accessible to talk about Bonhoeffer?
Jenny McBride is her name, and she's the current president of the International Bonhoeffer Association. Is
that what it's called? Are you guys a part of that?
I've actually gone to a few of those meetings.
I'm sure you have.
Oh my gosh, I love it so much. So yeah, I just had pulled up. So her book, Radical Discipleship, A Liturgical Politics of the Gospel. Wow. And then, so there's that, there's one called The Church for the World, A Theology of Public Witness. But she talks about like working with incarcerated people and working with homeless communities and like what it means to, what grace really means and what grace really looks like in our world. And she also wrote another book called Bonhoeffer and King about Martin Luther King Jr., their legacies and import for Christian social thought. So just kind of comparing, contrasting, you know, what does that look like? And I haven't read that one, but yeah, the other ones I haven't, they're just a way of showing this is what Bonhoeffer is talking about and what that might look like in the 21st century in the United States.
Wow. Interesting.
Jenny McBride.
Wow. All right. So lots of good Bonhoeffer books out there. Heather, if someone wanted to read a Bonhoeffer written book, what would be the first Bonhoeffer writing you would suggest? And I'm throwing you on the spot because I...
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like if you want to have like Bonhoeffer in a nutshell, The Cost of Discipleship, I think is just like the most, like probably the most frequently referenced Bonhoeffer. Uh-huh. What I think is like just a really interesting thing to write are some of his letters from when he was in Harlem. His time that he spent at Union Seminary, because he is talking about the United States and what church and religion and faith looks like in the U.S. In the 20s at that point, or maybe the 1930s. So I think those letters are really interesting to read.
All right. So go check those out.
What about you? Ugh. Is that where you're going next?
No,
I don't want to derail you.
No. Yeah, probably discipleship as well. It's just so good.
Yeah.
But if you wanted something a little, not lighter, but more of a, how do we live some of this out? I would start with Life Together. And it's, again, in a seminary setting, but it's a call to live differently. So, very interesting. Okay. We digress. What does Dietrich have to do with Advent? If you recall from our conversation in episode one, we talked about this idea of everything falling apart, and that is where Jesus is currently meeting people in the mess of life. And so I wanted to dive into some of those moments in Bonhoeffer's writings where he's experiencing everything falling apart. So I'll put on my best podcast voice and do some readings.
Just for everyone wanting to visualize this, this is Tom with his Bonhoeffer book, which has many, many post-it notes sticking out of it that he's just so excited for this, you guys.
I have not put this much effort and energy into a podcast in some time.
I've been talking about this for months. Okay. All right. Go for it.
This is an excerpt from a letter to Bonhoeffer's parents on November 29th, 1943, when he was in prison. We can and should also celebrate Christmas despite the ruins around us. I think of you as you now sit together with the children and with all the Advent decorations, as in earlier years you did with us. We must do all this even more intensively because we do not know how much longer we have. Mm. So, I think this is an important writing or excerpt of a letter to discuss because it gets at this whole idea of waiting and watching and not knowing if we're out of time or not. And so, Heather, could you talk again about apocalypse and what that means? You mentioned it a little bit at the end of the first episode here, but revisit that for a moment.
Yeah, yeah. So this idea of apocalypse...
Wait, hold on. It's not like... Left Behind and like...
Right, end of the world. No, okay. Not
like zombie apocalypse.
This is not a zombie apocalypse. No. But the idea of apocalypse as a revealing or an unveiling of like seeing what the truth really is. So thinking of apocalypse as like the end of the world as we know it because the truth is being revealed. How's that?
Yeah. Okay. So I wonder, and this is perhaps too broad to discuss, but thinking of Bonhoeffer in prison, like I'm wondering what truth is he hoping is revealed and things like that? Because this is from 1943. Mm-hmm. And so he's in prison. And I just, it's hard to imagine what sort of truth and hope is he going for here? Because he gets released from prison at some point here in 1943, but he's in this time of he knows what he needs to do, and yet I don't think he wants to be in prison. Mm-mm. Right? So how do you move forward out of that? And the Nazis are very much like, you need to stop talking and publishing and getting on the radio. Like he had a... Earlier in his life, Bonhoeffer had this not anti-Hitler, but anti-Führer speech that he was giving, and the radio feed cut out.
Like he was on the radio talking about it.
Yeah.
And they cut him off.
And they cut, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
So it was like this whole like, because Bonhoeffer was trying to articulate that God is who we should be, like our ultimate allegiance, if you will, is to God, not to the state or a person, and they cut him off.
Sure.
Which makes a whole lot of sense, right? Like Hitler was not only chancellor, but became president when the president died. So like they wanted control.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My brain is working here and I'm going to have a hard time articulating this, but that reminds me of, we talked about Advent in the last episode and how some churches start it the week earlier, but the week before Advent starts is this Christ the Sovereign or Christ the King holiday, which was only started at, you know, in the early 1900s as a church holiday. But isn't the whole point of Christ the King or Christ the Sovereign holiday, isn't the whole point of that about talking about how Jesus is Lord and there's not a sovereign or a king on earth who is above Jesus. So it seems like kind of what Bonhoeffer was talking about. In that radio speech, talking about how like, you know, we can't follow a leader of our country above our faith tells us to do.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, if you want to get to like, how does that manifest itself today in the church? Mm. I'm going to bring it up.
Mm.
Flags in a sanctuary. Like that's what it turns into.
Yeah.
There are pictures everywhere of the German church at that time with Nazi flags everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Which is crazy to think about now.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems insane. But there are American flags in congregations everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's the question is, where is your ultimate allegiance?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Bonhoeffer is essentially arguing here, like, despite everything that's going on here, we don't know how much longer we have. And it's that Luther quote of like, if the world were to end tomorrow, what would you do? Or he was like, he would still plant a tree. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. I think Bonhoeffer is saying like, we just need to keep moving on. And especially during this Advent season and Christmas season, like, do those things, because it is almost like this protest against the time that is in hopeful expectation of what will come. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, in 1943, sorry, I've got a PBS.com timeline of Bonhoeffer. But Germany is declared free of Jews. But Bonhoeffer, I think, is still like, this is terrible. But our actions in this time of Advent with decorations and with being with one another is a faithful protest of the life the Nazis have set up is not what we should be doing. And so gathering together, being with one another is this way of, I don't know, perhaps living into the future in the now.
So like living out our faith practices as a form of protest.
Yes.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Like as a form of protesting against what we see as not being faithful way of living.
Yeah. And it's not, notice how it's not violent, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's still bold in it. It kind of flies in the face of, I mean, Europe is torn apart by war at this time, right? Mm-hmm. And this is just hope against hope that something is coming, right? That there will be an advent of something else.
Mm-hmm. I'm racking my brain right now. I remember hearing someone recently talk about living with joy as that was their form of protest.
Mm. Oh, sure. That,
you know, I'm just going to keep living and I'm going to be happy and joyful and, you know, forget the rest of you. Like that's how I'm going to protest. Mm-hmm. It's just by being joyful. I really wish I could remember who that was.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if Google. Wait, did someone tell you that or did you read that?
I heard it somewhere. Probably a podcast, knowing me.
Probably.
So what does that look like for, like, I'm just thinking, what does that look like for me? You know, like, I can think of that as, you know, like Bonhoeffer and his family in Nazi Germany. Like, that seems really clear cut. Like, you know, celebrating Advent and anticipating Christmas while there's Nazis down the street. But, like, now I'm just thinking, okay, so what would that look like for us or for me to, I mean, what would I be protesting and what would that demonstration of faith or celebration look like?
It's a good question.
We're getting deep here, folks.
I know.
Welcome to Advent, a very Bonhoeffer Christmas.
Right? Like, we're very quiet and we're all just like staring at the ceiling. Mm-hmm. Like, what?
We had a sermon series two years ago for Advent, and it was called My Heart Shall Sing. And it was based off the Canticle of the Turning.
Yeah.
But I think singing is always a good form of protest. And so anytime you carol, I think that is certainly, and not singing about hippopotamuses for Christmas, Katie.
Hippopotami.
But I think when we sing of that, I mean, sweet little 8 pound, 6 ounce, whatever that quote is, when we sing about Jesus, that there's this idea that there's an alternate reality that we're called to live and embody. And so when we carol, I think we remind ourselves of that. Even if it's nostalgic, some of these carols, it's hopeful. Mm-hmm. Joy to the world, right? Mm-hmm. Silent night, whatever. I think of, what's the one? I Am So Glad Each Christmas Eve. I think I don't know, it's some carol from Sweden or something.
Yeah.
And I love that one so much because the very last verse, which never gets sung, is about the family being together decorating a tree, which to me is like, oh yeah, like it's about something else. It's about Jesus and family being together and just something different than the commercialized process that we experience. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, singing would be my form of protest as a faithful way of living. And then I think, oh, I'm sorry. And then I think of slave hymns, like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. what, like, if you haven't seen 12 Years a Slave, go do that. But when they sing, oh gosh, way down on the River Jordan, where John baptized me, Roll Jordan Roll. Sorry, I had to go through it in my head. Uh-huh. Roll Jordan Roll is a chilling song of hope and protest as they're burying a fellow slave. Mm. Oh my. Mm-hmm. Go watch that movie. Watch that scene. YouTube it. It's amazing.
Well, and I think singing in general, like singing hymns, like it, I think it's so easy to be cynical. Especially around Christmas time, mm-hmm. and like, ugh, it's just capitalism and blah, blah, blah. And there's something really like wholesome about singing Christmas music, you right. know, that like makes it easy to roll your eyes at that.
Yeah.
If you're in that cynical headspace of like nothing matters mm-hmm. and the world is trash mm-hmm. and, you know, nothing we do matters and everything is terrible. Mm-hmm. But when you're singing and singing hymns, singing Christmas hymns, singing about a baby, like it's just impossible to be cynical. It forces you to be hopeful, to do this thing that, like, you know, somebody might say is embarrassing, right?
Right.
Like, oh my gosh, they're out there singing, like, ugh, mm-hmm. right? Like the cool kids would never do that, right? But like, there's just something inherently hopeful in that
yeah.
that I think can change the way your brain is working, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. Oh, music.
Well, and especially too, I found myself to be doing this a lot more often now, but I've started paying attention to a lot of those words.
Oh.
More now than I did before. Because, like, you know, as a kid and growing up, like, you're singing these songs and you're singing them because they're fun. But as an adult, when you actually start paying attention to the words, it means something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more meaning to it.
It makes me think that, okay, by the time this episode comes out, this will have already passed. Mm-hmm. But when we're recording this, it's before Carols and Barrels.
Ooh,
when,
yeah.
you know, that's just a time to get together and sing Christmas music.
Yeah.
And that's just a hopeful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Mm. All right. Let's go to our next scripture passage.
Our sticky excerpt, note in your book.
The next sticky note. Okay. So this is... Oh, and by the way, in 1943, Bonhoeffer, when he was writing this, he would never be free again. I had to look that up. So he was in prison for the rest of his life. So here's our next one from 1940. This is about the birth of a child. Not of the astonishing work of a strong man, not of the bold discovery of a wise man, not of the pious work of a saint. It really is beyond all our understanding. The birth of a child shall bring about the great change, shall bring to all mankind salvation and deliverance. And I like this one here today because I think it gets at the upside downness of mm-hmm. of how God chooses to act in this. I think logic would say God would come and just say, hey, things are changing, mm-hmm. or Jesus would be born to an elite family. Mm-hmm. But God doesn't do that. God reverses our expectations of how God shows up. So how has God upset expectations in our life? And that's just kind of that's where my mind goes this Advent season. How does God show up in the unexpected ways?
Well, and in the people that you don't expect.
Oh, certainly.
I mean, and for me, you know, it's always how does God show up in kids? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. how can you see the love of God through kids in a way that it's harder to see in adults, you know, in the way that kids love and forgive, right. And, you know, don't hold grudges, mm-hmm. Don't care who you are, what you're wearing, how much money you have. It's, you know, mm-hmm. that's all those things aren't important with little ones. And that's, you know, one of the reasons I love hanging around Noah's Ark preschool so much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like thinking about God coming in the form of a baby and that vulnerability that shows, I just love that idea of like mm-hmm. God, like wanting to be with people so much that like God was willing to like come in this form that like required care from other people.
Ooh.
And it didn't have to be this show of like power and force, but it was this show of vulnerability. And like, what can we learn from that? That like, maybe if we are vulnerable with other people, then like, is that a way of showing what God is like? Mm-hmm. Or,
I like that though, because I think all too often we think we have to have it all together.
Oh mm-hmm. yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Right. Everything's so performative.
Yeah.
What if we just said, yeah, I have no idea. I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that not being like a strike against us.
Yeah. Or I need help.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
So how have you seen God show up in your life? Or, you know, one of those in my internship congregation, we called them God moments, where we're just like, oh yeah, something else is going on here than what I expected. This must have some sort of divine sort of thing going on here. So what, like, where has God shown up? You said Noah's Ark oftentimes, right?
Always.
Those peacemakers mm-hmm. down there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Preschool theology is the best. Let's just say that.
It really is. Oh man.
So where else has God shown up lately? I, not to just keep harping that kids are the best, but...
But they are.
And one of my kids who's exceptional. we were walking to the parade, the Eau Claire parade, for Clearwater Parade, whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. And we were walking along the river, and we saw a homeless person, and Rowan had leftover pizza, and he goes, Mom, I want to give that to him. Mm. He looks hungry. And it's like, wow, I was planning to walk by.
Mm-hmm.
and,
right.
And like, mm-hmm. and Rowan said, this is what I have to offer someone in need. Here, have my children's pizza. Like, mm-hmm. it's like, wow, huh. Even a simple gift like that meant the world. Maybe it may not have meant the world to this guy, but mm-hmm. for Rowan, that was, this is the gift he could bring. Mm-hmm. It's like, huh. Mm-hmm. How else can we be of service to others and just offer what we have and not think right. what we have is not good enough, but hey, I can offer up a ride right. or a casserole or something. And mm-hmm. there's sacredness in that.
Well, mm-hmm. and that's something that I was thinking about during this, all of this is, I don't really think I've shared this with anyone here at work, but, my uncle is having a lot of health complications right now, and he has essentially gone to the ER multiple times, had to go ambulance to La Crosse. He's down in Austin, Minnesota, and whatever. And it's just been rough. He's got two little kiddos. Kaylee is 5 and a half, and Spencer is 2, almost 3. And so my mom, it's her younger brother, she's been just like worried sick about it. And, you know, my grandma and like my whole family, we've all just been super worried about him and what's happening. And he texted my mom and I just one day. And so my fiance Jake is also from Austin, Minnesota. And so his parents live there, and my aunt, so my uncle's wife, works at the spam museum or spam shop with my future mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. And but my uncle texted us and just goes, Crystal, my fiance's mom, she goes, he's like, she's just the sweetest. Like, she stopped by and dropped us off dinner and like is just going out of her way. And so I texted her this weekend and I said, hey, thanks for doing this. Like, on behalf of, you know, mm-hmm. me, my grandma, my mom, thank you so much for doing this. It's, mm-hmm. you know, you have no idea how much it meant to them. And she goes, it's the least I can do. In fact, I can do more. Yeah. And she texted me and she said, let your mom know that if, you know, she ever needs to come down here, whether it be to take care of the little ones or to visit Mike or whatever, that she always has a place to stay at our house and whatever. And it's just, you know, it is really the little things, but it's also one of those things that to me, it's like, how beautiful that we have this circle of people mm-hmm. who, you know, just happen to have connected in this weird, wonky way and are all just looking out for each other. And that was kind of a big God moment for me recently is just like, we've all been worried and we're 2.5 hours. You know, well, I'm 2.5 hours away. My mom's 2 hours away. And to have somebody just right there to be like, we are looking out for your family because your family is our family.
Yeah.
Has been so nice. And yeah.
Yeah. Well, and in the same way, I mean, a couple things recently, you know, I coordinate the Christmas Sharing Project here where, you know, we kind of sponsor different family. We have 21 families that we're sponsoring and, you know, just putting out, here are the needs, here are the gifts that need. And someone said to me yesterday, like, oh, there's still a lot of tags left. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, it'll work out. It always works out. People always come through. People always, you know, it always works out. Someone always, you know, calls up and says, hey, I'm out shopping. Do you have anything else you still need to pick up? And it just always works out. Similarly, you know, we've got a member who has some needs right now going through a health thing. And, you know, there was a day where I posted some needs, you know, grocery delivery and things like that. And I just watched my phone that night just ping and ping and ping and ping as people signed up to help and signed up to help and signed up to help. And it's like, okay, this is, you know, it's overwhelming. Seeing how much people want to help other people and want to provide and show love and like that's God. That's God is in that. That the way that we care for one another, the way that we like act as a community. That's there's God in that.
All right, let's I think we've had enough.
enough God.
no, I think this has been great conversation, and I think we're starting to scratch the surface of what Bonhoeffer might be going through in prison when he's writing these two letters that we talked about here, or the first one and this last one here. And I think it's, as you talked about in the first episode, Heather, about when we're in the midst of COVID, like it was a revealing of a lot of things. And I think Bonhoeffer's getting that there with us through his writings in prison. Okay. So folks, I'd like to thank you for joining us for a very Bonhoeffer Christmas, which might turn into a really depressing Christmas right now. These are very heavy topics.
They are.
But next episode, we're going to pull out a little Christmas Day message from Bonhoeffer, and hopefully it's a little more hopeful, but at the same time I'm thinking Bonhoeffer's writings meet us right where we're at, wherever we are. All right, everyone, for Katie and Heather, this has been a very Bonhoeffer Christmas.
It has.
Bye.
Bye.